All right, folks, welcome in to Pickaxe and Roll, brought to you by our good friends over at Autograph. I'm your host, Ryan Blackburn, at NBA Blackburn on Twitter, part of the Mile High Sports Podcast Network, and I am very excited to talk about the Denver Nuggets and Minnesota Timberwolves. We're going to have a ball. We're going to have a great time. This is going to be a lot of fun. I cannot wait to get into this series. Done a lot of work over the course of these last few days about just where this series I think is going to go, and tried to spend that time as well as I possibly could when it comes to prepping for what could be, like, a lot of people are equating it to the Western Conference Finals. A lot of people are saying that whoever wins this series is going to advance to the NBA Finals and represent the West in there. I don't know about that. We'll see what happens. We'll see what actually becomes of this Dallas Mavericks, LA Clippers, OKC Thunder trio that is still alive on the other side of the bracket. But I can understand why a lot of people are saying that. We got plenty to get into, though. We've got plenty to be excited about. And just from my perspective on this Nuggets T-Wolves series, it's going to be a lot of fun. Going to be a very, very interesting time to be a Nuggets fan. Looking forward to chatting about it with all the Nuggets fans. Very excited to see. Dejan got in here very early. J.E.'s in here, says, let's go. Cedric's here. Good to see you too, my guy. Good to see you too. Thank you for always being a part of the show. This is going to be very, very fun. Before we get into Nuggets T-Wolves, I want to kind of wrap up with my final thoughts on Nuggets Lakers and then go around the rest of the playoff picture. But I will spend the majority of my time on Nuggets T-Wolves, I promise you that. But I think I owe it to myself, given that I podcasted about Nuggets Lakers game five at like 2 o'clock in the morning on Monday. I was certainly delirious at that point and definitely want to kind of wrap up that particular aspect of Denver Nuggets playoff stuff. So we're going to get into Nuggets Lakers. But first and foremost, we have a new sponsor on the podcast, betonline.ag, BetOnline. They are a part of things, and I wanted to do a quick read at the beginning of this thing. Series odds for Nuggets T-Wolves upcoming. The Nuggets are -205 to win the series. The Timberwolves are currently +175 to win the series. Denver's favored. Denver as the home team, they are, it's not a really surprise that they are the series favorite for this thing, but I think that the margin there, it's basically implied that they're about a 65% chance to win the series versus 35% for the T-Wolves. I guess that's par for the course, but wanted to do that quick read really quickly. We'll tell you a little bit more about Bet Online later in the podcast. But first, as I said, final thoughts on Nuggets Lakers. I shared this yesterday and just like thinking about where Denver was at, thinking about what they needed. Michael Porter Jr. really did level up in this series. He really did. And it was very, very interesting to see him take some ownership of that Nuggets-Lakers series where Nikola Jokic already bears so much of the burden. Jamal Murray clearly hampered by an injury. KCP, Aaron Gordon didn't, like, Aaron Gordon had a great game three. Don't get me wrong, but he did not have a bunch of great points, rebounds, assists kind of performances, especially in games 4 and 5. Was not really his role, Aaron Gordon. Michael Porter, it was. Michael Porter's role was to give Denver a boost, and they absolutely got it from him every single series. And we just got news earlier, I think last night, that Javon Porter, his youngest, I think youngest brother, but there's a lot of members of the Porter family. Not Coben, not Jonte, Javon Porter was just arrested for a DWI in Missouri. Like, very frustrating. Very frustrating and very sad for the Porter family that this is now a third brother that is currently locked up in some scandal, locked up in the law, and like has a bunch of things going on with them. So this is crazy that this is now happening. But for Porter, his ability to compartmentalize everything that is currently going on. Like, he can't really be blamed for any of this. It sucks that this is happening to him and around him. But Porter is just playing basketball and has done so in a very, very effective way for the Nuggets in a situation where he has been their second most consistent player all season. Even more consistent than Jamal. Even more consistent than Aaron Gordon, than Kentavious Caldwell-Pope. Those guys have been consistent, but Porter has been around and available and effective almost every single night. And the only time where he has not been has been like the occasional defensive downturn. For the vast majority of the season, Porter has been great, and he was great in the Nuggets-Lakers series, his best series of his career, in my opinion. Now it's going to get tougher, because I'm not going to lie, folks. Scoring on Rui Hachimura is not that impressive. What Porter did was impressive, to be clear. But the level of competition that he did it against was not. LeBron spent most of his time guarding Aaron Gordon. Jokic was being guarded by Anthony Davis. Rui ultimately ended up being the main guy to check Porter, and he did not do a good job. And so I'm thinking that between between Jaden McDaniels, Nikhil Alexander-Walker, Anthony Edwards, and even Karl-Anthony Towns at some points, they're going to be better defenders that guard MPJ for much of this upcoming playoff series. And it's going to be up to MPJ to level up his game even more, to stay as consistent, to be providing similar production on similar efficiency. And if he can do that, then Denver's got a good chance. They really, really do. Because you know the Joker's going to get his. He's going to be good. Jamal, despite the fact that he's got way better perimeter defenders guarding him now, I think that he levels up and he gets better as the playoffs go along, because I think he'll get as long as this calf doesn't nag at him for a consistent time, I think that Jamal will be pretty good. But if Porter plays at the level that he just played at, then the Nuggets are going to have as much of an opportunity to advance in this series as they possibly can get. They need Michael Porter Jr. The second thing from the final thoughts from Nuggets Lakers, the Nuggets are a bit more beat up than one might hope for at this point. Part of me wishes that Denver had just, rather than try to go through the final 82 games and try to get the one seed, part of me wishes that a lot of the games looked a lot more like the San Antonio game, and they just kind of they didn't play with the same level of energy and effort, or maybe they even rested some guys down the stretch a little bit more, because at this point, the difference between, they won, 57 games, I think, or did they win 56? I don't remember. They won 57. They won 57, and what would be the real difference if they had won 54 is my big question. They still would have been the 3 seed. They still would be in this matchup. The only difference probably would have ended up being they play the Suns in the first round as opposed to the Lakers. And I honestly think that the way that the Suns were playing and the way that they sort of match up, they might have been a better matchup than the Lakers ended up being. I did not think that that would be the case. The Lakers ended up being pretty tough, despite the fact that Denver won those games. Denver had to really work for them. So I wonder if that might have been the better course of action. Now, the difference is that you get an extra game in Denver and you get to start the series in Denver. Maybe that helps. Maybe that is enough of a margin that Denver has the advantage. But that means, and it puts pressure, that Denver has to defend their home court. If they do that, then they'll win the series, obviously. And having a Game 7 at home is a lot different than having a Game 7 on the road. So, we will see. I think Denver, like, they're built for it no matter where it is. But Denver's just a much better team at home than they are on the road for whatever reason. And hopefully they could take advantage of that against the T-Wolves. And last thing, the bench unit, my opinion, I've been thinking about this letter grade. I think they get a C minus for the series as a whole. Not a D, not an F or anything like that. I think they get about a C minus. And the reason for that, game one, Denver was able to win when they played a 10-man rotation. They did a fantastic job of getting a 10-man rotation out there, not overloading the minutes initially. But then you look at the rest of the minutes, and you look at the minutes for the series. Jokic played 40 minutes per game. Jamal Murray, 39.7. Michael Porter, 39.4. Aaron Gordon, 40.2. KCP, 36. Christian Brown averaged, off the bench, the most minutes per game of any Nuggets reserve at 13.1. Peyton Watson had 12. Reggie Jackson at 10.3. DeAndre Jordan had 8.6 in one game. And Justin Holiday played in all five games, averaged 7.1. That is not good enough. But if you've been listening to me and been listening to my podcast, I thought that this was more par for the course. I didn't think that Denver would play a lot of minutes with their bench. I didn't think that it would go that well. And so I'm not really that surprised. Now, other folks had more strong takes on Denver's bench unit and how they are surviving. And how Denver, yes, they are surviving the non-Jokic minutes, to be clear. A lot of folks are saying, oh man, all the worries, they're overstated. I'm not sure that's true. And the reason why I'm not sure that's true is because Jamal Murray, Michael Porter, and Aaron Gordon are often staggering with the second unit. And because of that, they're not actually getting that much of a break. And Denver's minutes with their starters all intact are not as good as a result, because they have to spend so much time and energy propping up that second group. So that's something I'm thinking about. It's something you have to think about going forward. Something that every Nuggets fan, you gotta know that Christian Brown and Peyton Watson have to be better for the second round than they were in the first round. Christian Brown as a whole shot 0% from three, shot 60% from the free throw line, only got to the free throw line five times, was 3 of 5, 0 of 9 from three. Now, he was 8 of 13 from 2, which is great. That's a good number. That's a really good number. Peyton Watson, 3 of 7 from 2, 3 of 10 from 3. Made a big 3 in the first quarter of Game 5, or the fourth quarter of Game 5, excuse me, like the first play of the fourth quarter. So there is an opportunity for them to get better in this spirit, in this series specifically. I think that between Christian Brown and Peyton Watson, they could be better in this particular series. There are more bodies for them to match up with on the wing than there are against the Lakers, where those guys are often going to be challenged to guard LeBron James and Anthony Davis. Now they're going to be tasked with guarding Jaden McDaniels, Kyle Anderson maybe, although he played a very brief amount of time, Nickeil Alexander-Walker, but also Anthony Edwards and Jaden McDaniels and even Karl Anthony Towns and Naz Reid. So there are going to be some big guys too that they have to match up with on the second unit. So I'll be watching that pretty closely. I think that that is a pretty big swing factor for this series. So what does Denver get from their bench? What do they get from Christian Brown and Peyton Watson, who they invested so much time and so many minutes in during the regular season? Can that translate to the playoffs? We will see. Really quick, as I promised, other series around the NBA. Knicks Sixers, Tyrese Maxey saved that day in incredible fashion. I was about to shoot off some tweets on Joel Embiid and the way that the Sixers had played. Tobias Harris showed up. Joel Embiid, like, yes, the numbers, he had like, what, 15 points, 10 rebounds, 10 assists, something like that. Five blocks. He had some pretty great blocks. But Tyrese Maxey was the best player on the floor for either side. And good for the Sixers for having a guy like that to really bail him out. Like, he definitely got bailed out in that one. Had 9 turnovers. Thought he was going to get the quadruple-double. Pacers-Bucks. I wonder if the Pacers regret Game 5 that just happened last night. They had the Bucks dead to rights. No Dame, no Giannis. Up 3-1. All you had to do was take Game 5. Of course, it was in Milwaukee. And you get some great performances from Patrick Beverley, Chris Middleton, Bobby Portis, guys like that. And the Bucks stayed alive. Now, if Dame and Giannis come back for Game 6, which apparently is possible, what if the Pacers blow this series? It wouldn't surprise me if they did. But Pacers have Game 6 in Indiana, so hopefully they can get that done for their sake. Closeout games are very hard, as Cosmic says in the comments. Mavs-Bucks, we'll see what happens. Or Mavs-Clippers, excuse me. We will see what happens with that. I still think the Mavs are in control, but this knee injury, this knee sprain for Luka Doncic puts that into some doubt. Obviously, Kawhi Leonard hampered on the other side, but Paul George, James Harden, they step up in Game 4. We will see what happens with that series, but Thunder are going to get a long rest because I think that series was it's definitely going 6 and it might go 7. So we'll see when that actually starts up next. Cavs Magic. Paolo's been the best player in the series in Cavs Magic, and that includes Donovan Mitchell, Darius Garland. Franz Wagner had a really nice Game 4, obviously, but Paolo's been the best player. And the Cavs, they didn't have Jared Allen in Game 5, and they actually, in my opinion, they looked better. It looked a lot more clean. So we'll see whether they can translate that in Game 6, what actually happens there. But I think that Paolo's just, like, he's really, really impressive. They need a guard to hit some shots from 3. Just a guard. Hopefully it's Gary Harris. Would love to see Gary have a big Game 6 for them. He was bad in Game 5. And then Celtics Heat. I think that one ends tonight. For the Heat. But who knows? Maybe the Celtics drop it. Maybe they play with their food a little bit too much, especially without Kristaps Porzingis out there. But I got to imagine that this is the swan song for the Miami Heat. So we will see. We will see what ultimately happens with it. But tell you what, let's take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk about the T-Wolves. We're going to talk about the Nuggets T-Wolves in that series and just what it all looks like. I'm going to share mostly information, but I've got some takes as well that I think you're going to want to listen to. We'll be right back. But first, everybody, this podcast, as you know, it's now sponsored by our good friends over at Autograph, who do a great, great job of putting fans in the best possible position. Autograph is where real fans get unreal rewards by bringing the best content for your team into one place. They're the first app that can recognize and reward fans, turning their passion into access and experiences and actually rewarding you for being a fan. You can read articles from your favorite team's blogs and publishers directly on the app like me. You can also listen to your top podcasts, and hopefully you can find mine within the podcast app as well. All you got to do is scan that QR code, sign up, use promo code MHS, and you can level up in status, unlock unique rewards like discounted tickets, memorabilia, especially memorabilia that's signed, jerseys, game balls, things like that. All you got to do, sign up, use promo code MHS, and make sure to let them know that you came from us. We'll be right back on Pickaxe and Roll.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
And we're back. Pickaxe and Roll, Ryan Blackburn here. Thank you so much for tuning into the show. Appreciate all the love and support on the podcast. As always, if you can, please like and subscribe to the YouTube video down below if you're watching on YouTube. If you're listening on audio, make sure to go rate, review, and subscribe there. Let them know that you enjoy the show, especially as we're continuing to try to grow this, doing the best that I can. Got a lot of stuff going on, trying to figure out and put out the best possible content that I can. So hopefully you are enjoying the stuff. All right, let's get into it. Let's talk about Nuggets T-Wolves. I've got some takes, but first I wanted to discuss the T-Wolves rotation and help everybody kind of familiarize themselves with what the T-Wolves do. So the T-Wolves basically play a nine-man rotation with 8 and 9 in said rotation being a little bit less important within the scope of things. Anthony Edwards, Jaden McDaniels, Rudy Gobert, Mike Conley, and Karl-Anthony Towns start. Nickeil Alexander-Walker off the bench averages over 31 minutes per game, or at least he did against the Phoenix Suns. I'm not sure whether that's going to happen against the Nuggets. They will probably go a little bit bigger. They'll probably play Towns a little bit more than his 28 minutes per game. He's currently playing at the sixth most minutes for the T-Wolves in their rotation right now. Naz Reid's playing 18 minutes per game as the seventh man, not even the sixth man anymore, despite winning sixth man of the year. And Kyle Anderson is the eighth man. Monte Morris is the ninth man. They play 10 and 9 minutes per game, respectively. They are the only T-Wolves players in the minus in this series. Everybody else is in the plus. Obviously, that makes sense when you are in a blowout in a lot of these games and it's a 4-0 sweep. But Anthony Edwards was plus 60 in his 39 minutes per game. Jaden McDaniels plus 48. Rudy Gobert plus 62. Mike Conley plus 38. That's pretty interesting. An interesting breakdown from a plus-minus perspective. Their sub-patterns, here's what they usually do. Anthony Edwards plays the Jokic rotation. So if you're tracking what the Nuggets do, they play Jokic first and third quarters. They take him out at the beginning of the second and fourth quarters and then reinsert him as soon as he's ready. Edwards basically does the same thing. And Jaden McDaniels plays that KCP role, which isn't quite overlapping with what Jokic would do, but it's very close. They're basically mirroring their minutes. So Jaden McDaniels will mirror the Anthony Edwards minutes. When Ant is on the floor in the playoffs so far, in the Phoenix Suns series, plus 17.4 net rating in 158 minutes, according to PBP stats. When Ant is off the floor, 0.0 net rating in 34 minutes. The Wolves were even, which is incredible. And a big reason for that is the Conley and Gobert minutes. They stagger. They are the Nuggets version of Jamal Murray and Aaron Gordon, while Towns is their version of MPJ. Sometimes he will play with the second unit, Towns will. Sometimes he will not. Sometimes he'll play mostly with the first unit. But the big deal for Conley and Gobert, the Nuggets have seen this clearly before and in several games. When those guys are on the floor without Ant, only 27 minutes in the playoffs because Ant only sat down for 34 minutes total, but 27 of those minutes came without Ant on the floor. Plus 10 net rating for Conley and Gobert without Anthony Edwards. When Ant plays without Conley and Gobert, this is at the end of the first and third quarters when those guys are getting a break, minus 1.7 net rating in 33 minutes. So those kind of bridging the gap minutes between the first quarter and the second quarter, and then the third quarter and the fourth quarter, those are like where Denver starts to break up their starting unit. And then they try different combinations of guys, whether it's for the Wolves, it's Nickeil Alexander-Walker, it's Naz Reid, it's Kyle Anderson, it's Monte Morris. For Denver, it's Christian Brown, Peyton Watson, Justin Holiday, and Reggie Jackson. Now, let me just say those names again, just so that people fully understand where the bench disparities may lie. You've got Naz Reid as the sixth man for the T-Wolves. Actually, he's not even the sixth man. He did win sixth man of the year. Nickeil Alexander-Walker is the guy playing most of the minutes, and I would expect him to play more minutes in this series. Maybe not than he did against the Suns, who had three guards often, were playing smaller. Nickeil was very, very good in his minutes. He was a big cheat code for what the T-Wolves needed in that first series. Just a great defender across the board, switchable, guarded, shot the ball. He didn't shoot it as well as you would expect, but he shot it enough that he has some serious gravity out there. And the Nuggets know that he can hit threes. It's a big swing factor, or at least it was a big swing factor for those Nuggets T-Wolves games last year. He hit threes, I believe, in game four, and that was the only game that Denver lost. So he'll bridge the gaps. He will play that Bruce Brown role that Denver had last year. The difference is Denver doesn't have a Bruce Brown. Now they've got Christian Brown. They've got Peyton Watson. So you've got Christian Brown and Peyton Watson as the sixth and seventh man. Maybe Reggie Jackson, depending on the day. And then on the other side, you've got Naz Reid, Nickeil Alexander-Walker, and Monte Morris or Kyle Anderson, one of the two. And then you've got Justin Holiday and one of Monte Morris, Kyle Anderson, to kind of play that ninth man role. So off the bat, Denver's just smaller, especially in their second unit. 3 7-footers or close to it in the T-Wolves rotation. And as big as the Nuggets are against most teams, they are smaller than the T-Wolves, which is very rare. And it's one of the reasons why the T-Wolves match up with them pretty reasonably. And they're going to play Naz Reid with Gobert and Towns for most of the series, like with one of the two. And that's just how they'll break it up. Maybe they will occasionally go to Kyle Anderson and Naz Reid together. That's when they're really going with a real bench. But they might even have Edwards out there with those two, in which case, that's like Jokic playing with Justin Holiday and Christian Brown and Peyton Watson. Like, that's those kinds of minutes. So that's how they work. That's how the T-Wolves work. That's what they mostly do. And it's very reminiscent of what the Nuggets do, which, not really a surprise, Chris Finch is the coach. Mike Anori is his main assistant. Those guys both came from Denver. They're fantastic, obviously. Chris Finch, if you haven't heard, tore his patellar tendon in his knee at the end of game four, right at the end, when Mike Conley kind of trucked him, like getting fouled by Devin Booker along the left side of the floor, went into Chris Finch, and Finch had to have surgery yesterday. It was successful. They're talking about ways to get him on the floor, but that's one sort of wrinkle when it comes to sub patterns, when it comes to styles, and it comes to just how they play. Chris Finch may not be on the sidelines, and I wonder if that changes anything up for them. Finch's tendencies, he generally lets his team play. He generally doesn't take timeouts that quickly. He allows them to work through their stuff, and that was a point of contention at a lot of times for T-Wolves fans, but it seems to have worked, and they are getting consistent, and with Conley out there instead of D'Angelo freaking Russell, they seem to be smarter. No shit. I'm very curious to see how Denver approaches this. Let me talk about strengths real quick. The two biggest strengths for the T-Wolves. And this isn't like player specific or anything like that. This is just what they've done and how they decimated the Suns. The first is offensive rebounding. According to Cleaning the Glass, the T-Wolves grabbed 39.7% of their misses in the half court versus the Phoenix Suns. Nearly 40% of their misses in the half court were grabbed via offensive rebound. That is insane. That is an insane thing to think about. And it's also not a surprise based off of the matchups, based off of how small the Suns are. Yusuf Nurkic is one player. Kevin Durant is like 11-7 in terms of how old he is. And they don't have a lot of bigs or even bigger players off their bench. They just often play three-guard lineups. So it's not a surprise that a team that employs three different seven-footers is going to dominate, as well as guys like Jaden McDaniels, who's like 6'11". You've got Nickeil Alexander-Walker, who likes to crash. You've got Anthony Edwards, who's an athletic freak. Mike Conley grabbed a pretty like important offensive rebound at the end of game four, kicking it out to Karl Anthony Towns for a big three. And so they've got guys that do that. They've got plenty of different options. Players that will make the hustle plays, that are smart, that know how to pick at weaknesses. And they identified Phoenix to have a defensive rebounding weakness, a size weakness. And that's a big deal. 41.1, actually, oh, here's a better stat. They averaged 29.5 points per missed shot, according to Cleaning the Glass, which would lead all teams in recent regular season history. They are monsters on the offensive glass and very big. And they also just try to get to the rim. 41.1% of their shots came at the rim for Minnesota against the Suns. They only shot 60.5% at the rim, though, which is not as good as you would think. Usually you want to be like 65% or above. They shot about 5% worse than you would expect, but because they grabbed so many offensive rebounds, didn't really matter. By comparison, for what it's worth, the Lakers shot 38.4% of their shots at the rim. They got to the rim pretty consistently. They knew that that was the way to get to Denver, and they nearly won Game 5 as a result. It was nearly sent back to 6 in LA. So, the same way that the Lakers attack the rim, you better believe that Anthony Edwards is coming down Broadway. You better believe that Rudy Gobert is going to be attacking the rim. Karl Anthony Towns will try to bully ball his way. And then guys like Jaden McDaniels and Mike Conley will try to do the same thing. So this is a big deal. Offensive rebounding and interior defense are going to be a big deal for Denver. The other big strength from the T-Wolves is perimeter defense. Jaden McDaniels and Nickeil Alexander-Walker are maybe the best perimeter tandem in the NBA defensively. McDaniels, his numbers don't pop off the page in terms of like steals or blocks or anything like that, but he is one of those guys that defends extremely fundamentally, that doesn't give you any airspace, and then contests every shot that you make without having to block it or like really do much with it. Kind of like Aaron Gordon in that regard, but longer, more athletic, and even better. McDaniels is one of the best perimeter defenders in the league right now, maybe the best. And Nickeil Alexander-Walker is very close. Like, he has, like, if he had played enough minutes for all defensive consideration, he might have made it. That's how good he was. So, Jamal Murray, obviously, going to have a hell of a time. This is going to be tough. As tough as it was for Jamal at times last year against the T-Wolves, where it was just Nickeil Alexander-Walker, now those guys are going to take turns. They're going to do what they can to bother him to get off his spots. And Austin Reeves, not a great defensive player, but he made a great impact against Jamal. Imagine what a great defensive player can do when they are locked in. That is something that is just going to have to figure out. Denver's going to have to set really good screens, going to have to get those guys off of him. They're going to have to take advantage if Rudy Gobert is playing drop coverage to try to stay attached to Joker. And if that's the case, then Jamal's going to have to make some tough shots. He's going to have to make threes. They're going to have to see if they could break the T-Wolves' two-on-two defensive scheme. Now, if they try to switch, Gobert is a great switch center defensively. Don't let what other people say change your opinion of Gobert. Against Devin Booker, Rudy Gobert held him to 15 points on 17 shots. 6 of 17 from the field, 1 of 5 from 3, 2 of 2 from the line. 4 assists, 1 turnover. Kevin Durant, against Rudy Gobert, scored 14 points on 6 of 15, 1 of 2 from 3, 1 of 2 from the line, 3 assists, 2 turnovers. Like, those guys are great. And Gobert was even better defensively. That's on the switch. That's when the big man is switching onto the perimeter. And that's one of those things that Denver has constantly taken advantage of. So I wonder if Murray's going to have to give up the ball a little bit more in those situations. Rather than attacking Gobert, rather than challenging him consistently, he's going to have to give up the ball to Joker in the post. That should obviously be his read most of the time. But it's why I wonder if they're actually going to give up the switch or not. Because, like, if it's Jaden McDaniels or Nickeil Alexander-Walker, obviously a lot different if it's McDaniels, who's like 6'11". If it's Alexander Walker, Joker should put him in a box. Like, that's pretty clear. But there will be help from the weak side, and Denver's going to have to capitalize in those situations. But that is one thing that if Denver is going to take advantage of in this series, it's going to have to be that. That when Minnesota tries to switch, like they did against Phoenix, rather than have Jusuf Nurkić in the post, it's Nikola Jokic in the post. It's a little bit of a different threat level when it comes to those possessions. So hopefully Denver can take advantage. When we come back, more strengths and then some weaknesses, some other things that I think can really help out Denver, as well as some initial thoughts on where I think this is going to go with this series. We'll be right back. But first, everybody, this podcast is now brought to you by our friends over at betonline.ag. BetOnline is your number one source for all of your summer sports this season, with MLB, golf, NBA, and NHL playoff stats. All the latest stats, news, and scores available to your favorite teams. Get the latest odds and lines, including the latest team matchups, player props, and odds on just about every sport out there. Head over to the website today or use your mobile device and download that BetOnline app. Get in on the action. BetOnline, where the game starts. We'll be right back on Pickaxe and Roll. We're back. Final segment, Pickaxe and Roll. Thank you so much for tuning into the show. Let's go over a couple more strengths for the T-Wolves, because there's a lot of them. Like, this team is really, really good. They are a really, really, really good team. They might even be a great team. Like, regular season is any indication. Like, they had a better net rating. They were up at the top of the West for much of the season. They were very consistent. They're the number one defense for the entire year, pretty much by a mile. I think at this point that they can, like there's a reasonable thing for them to be considered the best team in the Western Conference. Like, there's a reasonable argument for it. Will they end up being? I don't know. Will Denver be able to hold on to their home court? They're certainly favored. Like, a lot of places believe in Denver's championship potential. But one of the things that sort of separates this team right now, that sort of separates these two teams, is the outside shooting. In this series, cleaning the glass when there were like non-garbage time stuff, the T-Wolves shot 37.5% from three versus the Suns. Watching some of the possessions, pretty despicable Suns defense, not going to lie. Like, they were pretty bad, and the execution like particularly from guys like Royce O'Neal when he had to come in and start for Grayson Allen. Guys like that, Bradley Beal was horrible defensively, and he was tasked with guarding Anthony Edwards, which is not great. Denver has a better defense than Phoenix. They do. They have a better playoff defense than Phoenix, and they are more connected than Phoenix. But if there is one area of weakness I think you can really point to for Denver, they did give up a fair amount of open threes to the Lakers. The Lakers didn't take them a ton because they're not a good shooting team. Because like Denver was 30th in three-point rate this season, and the Lakers were 29th during the regular season. So it's not a surprise that Denver didn't get as burned from the three-point line in that series. The T-Wolves are not that team. The T-Wolves shot really well against the Suns in the first round, and I kind of expect them to shoot pretty well against the Nuggets. I don't think they'll shoot as well, but they shot 37.5%, which was one of the better marks in the NBA. And from their main guys, they got some really good production. Anthony Edwards, 14 of 32 from three, 44%. Karl-Anthony Towns, 9 of 17 from three, 53%. He shot well, Towns did, especially in game four. And some of the shots that he was hitting, like those are just shots that you got to live with sometimes. Like 28 footers on the left and right wings. Sometimes he's wrapping around a screen. And you got to be smart where you can test him. But you also can't press up to him too much because if you get beat, then you're up a creek. So Aaron Gordon, I think, is going to take on that matchup a fair amount. I also think that Michael Porter will take on that matchup a fair amount. That's going to be interesting. It's going to be interesting to see how that sort of impacts things. Jamal Murray will probably guard Mike Conley. KCP will probably start on Anthony Edwards. Although it wouldn't surprise me if Denver switches up those matchups and then tries to put Aaron Gordon on Anthony Edwards. Just a little bit more size, a little bit more physicality. I don't think that either of those guys can guard Ant, which is why I think that Christian Brown and Peyton Watson are going to be important in this series as well. But in the starting lineup, which is the lineup that Denver trusts the most, Michael Porter's probably going to have to spend some time guarding Karl-Anthony Towns. It's not just going to be Aaron Gordon. I don't think that you can really put Jokic on Towns. We've seen that play out before. And not to mention, Jokic is probably better guarding Gobert anyway, because Jokic is probably, sorry, I'm just reading a comment. Jokic is probably better guarding Gobert anyway because he can stay closer to the glass, he can rebound, he can probably prevent some of those offensive rebounding opportunities that the T-Wolves got against the Suns. And that is a big deal. That's a big margin that if Denver can clear those possessions without giving the T-Wolves second opportunities, then that's how you sort of like cut down on this margin that the T-Wolves were able to beat against the Suns. But I think it's going to be interesting to see what Denver does. Like, Towns shot well. Nickeil Alexander-Walker did not, but he was at 32%. It wasn't like it was crazy bad. Mike Conley shot 36.4%, 8 of 22. Naz Reid was at 31%, 5 of 16. Jaden McDaniels, 3 of 11, 27%. He only took 11 threes. If there is one person that you want to kind of funnel the ball to, it's probably him. Now, he did have some good games. I think he had like 25 points in game 3, and a lot of that was on drives. A lot of that was taking advantage of the Suns. I think that Michael Porter will probably spend most of his time guarding Jaden McDaniels. He's got to win that matchup. Can't be outscored by Jaden McDaniels. That can't happen. Like, honestly, like Michael Porter probably can't be outscored by Karl Towns. I think can outscore him because you think that Ant and Jokic will probably have the two most points for each team. Then Murray and Towns probably about the same. Then it's Michael Porter and where that matchup, like Porter's got to be outscoring somebody like McDaniels. He's got to win that matchup a little bit. But the T-Wolves, they shot the ball really well. It's possible that they shoot the ball well again. Denver's going to have to, live with some of the threes from those guys in order to protect the rim a little bit more. But they can't just give it up willingly. They got to be better. And we'll see if they can be. Final thing on the T-Wolves strengths. The Anthony Edwards factor, like 31 points, 8 rebounds, 6 assists against the Suns, 51, 44, 84 shooting splits, like nearly 50, 40, 90, just a little bit weak from the free throw line, but not like that weak, like it's still 84. He looks like Michael Jordan, like he really does. I'm not saying that he is, but if you squint hard enough and you look at it, you can see it. You can definitely understand why people are making those comparisons, whether it's him or Kobe Bryant or Dwayne Wade or whoever. Anthony Edwards is that dude. He is very competitive. Doesn't matter who he's guarding in front of him. He's going to attack them. Bradley Beal got the assignment in the Sun series. Spent the vast majority of the time guarding Ant. Boy, did he get cooked. 54 points. 60% from the field on 17 of 28 from shooting. 6 of 11 from 3. 10 of 11 from the free throw line. 9 assists. Did have 10 turnovers. And that's one thing that I think the Nuggets can learn a little bit. Edwards, when he gets hyped up, he can still get a little turnover prone. He can still be somebody who makes mistakes here or there. The Nuggets have to make him think a little bit more than he did have to against Beal. Sometimes he got into those zones where he just wasn't passing and he was going to take a shot. And most of the time he made it. Like most of the time against the Suns, he looked good. I think that KCP is a way better defender than Bradley Beal. He's bigger. He's smarter. He's got better hands. He just knows what he's supposed to do. But we also saw during the regular season that when Ant wanted to, he cooked KCP as well. So Gordon's going to have to spend some time on him as a bigger option. Peyton Watson, Christian Brown, they're going to have to spend some time on him. If Ant goes off and puts up those same numbers against the Nuggets, they can win because they won the series last year, but it's not going to be as easy. Like Denver, 5 games last year. Yes, games 4 and games 5 were a lot closer. They lost game 4, they won game 5. But it'll be a long series if Ant does what he just did to the Suns. And I kind of have faith that he will. Denver doesn't have the right defender to guard him. They've got some good options. They don't have a great option. So I'm very curious to see what happens. Finally, a couple weaknesses for the T-Wolves. They turn the ball over in bunches a little bit, especially when they get harassed on the ball. That's the one thing that the Suns kind of did. Their one saving grace, really, was the Suns. They turned over the T-Wolves a little bit, and they got to the free throw line. Ant averaged 4 turnovers per game in this series. Towns, Gobert, and Conley each averaged about 2. That doesn't sound like a lot in the grand scheme of things, but other guys had 1, maybe 2 here or there. Sometimes you get a run in bunches. Denver, if they can force some turnovers, will be very good. The problem is Denver doesn't force a ton of turnovers with their defensive scheme. That's not who they are. Now, when they play well, when they have those margins, they can really do some good things. But it's not the way that Denver really defends right now. Like, they are a pretty base defense. They try to keep everything in front of them. They try to make you shoot tough shots as opposed to taking chances, gambling in passing lanes, overwhelming you physically, things like that. That's not what Denver does. But they might have to try against the T-Wolves. They got to try to surprise them a little bit. The T-Wolves can be foul prone. With as physical of defense as they play, they can have some contact. Jokic has to bait Gobert and Towns into foul trouble. If you remember in game 5, he fouled out both of those guys with as well as he was. Like, he didn't play great from an efficiency standpoint, but what he did do was he outsmarted them in a lot of ways. He used their attitude and momentum against them, and he got them up in the air a lot. Drew a lot of fouls. He can do that again in this series. And as intense as Jaden McDaniels can be, as Anthony Edwards can be, those guys are pretty foul prone as well, especially when they're trying to make the highlight play. Denver, specifically Jamal Murray and Michael Porter, can really take advantage of that too. Another guy who could take advantage of that on switches is Aaron Gordon. Whether he gets the calls or not, who knows? But I do think that that's one area where Denver could really improve. They scored nine free throws in game five. They shot so fewer free throws than the Lakers did in that series. This one could even out a little bit. Denver's got a better rep, and they're not going to like, this isn't going to be one of those things where the T-Wolves are getting amazing calls while the Nuggets are not getting amazing calls. Like, this is going to be pretty even, in my opinion. Knock on wood. Finally, actually, no, two more things. The T-Wolves are an average first half team. Where they differed from Denver during this playoff series, they're an average first half team and an elite second half team during these playoffs. The Nuggets were an elite second half team, basically the same exact stats, the same exact numbers on offense and defense. But the difference was Denver was horrible in the first half. They had the fourth or fifth worst net rating in the first half. That just simply cannot happen for Denver. I don't expect it to happen again. I think that Denver will start the series better. I think they got bored of the Lakers, and the Lakers also surprised them a couple times with different things that they tried. I think the Nuggets will be better heading into this series. I think they'll be more engaged at the beginning of games. Famous last words, obviously, but I think that they will approach this with the requisite respect that they need to have. And that means getting off to better starts. Now, the last thing for the T-Wolves. They obviously played a very undersized team in Phoenix. The Nuggets are a very big team by comparison. They may not be as big as the T-Wolves, but they're a very big team. Denver can match up. Like, yes, sometimes KD was on Karl-Anthony Towns, but at the beginning of Game 4 specifically, when Towns went off, they had Royce O'Neal guarding Cat. Like, Royce O'Neal is 6'4". That's the same height as Jamal Murray, which is insane. Like, Denver's not going to do that. They're going to have either Aaron Gordon or Michael Porter as the primary defenders on somebody like Cat. They're going to have 6'5" KCP or 6'8" Aaron Gordon on Anthony Edwards, as opposed to 6'3" Grayson Allen or 6'3" Bradley Beal or 6'5" Devin Booker, I guess. Like, it's just a different amount of size that the T-Wolves are going to face. Now, the second unit is a different story. The Nuggets' second unit is just as small as the T-Wolves' second unit, unless the Nuggets are staggering Michael Porter and Aaron Gordon there, in which case it's about the same. So that's going to be something. That's going to be something. It wouldn't surprise me if DeAndre Jordan makes another appearance at the beginning of the series, especially when the T-Wolves decide to go bare at the beginning. The Nuggets need a good big man off the bench. It's probably not going to be Zeke Nnaji. It'll probably be DeAndre Jordan. Whether he can provide that or not, that remains to be seen. Asking DeAndre Jordan to do that is very uncomfortable, especially against one of the best teams in the league, especially against Rudy Gobert and Karl-Anthony Towns and guys like that. So I don't know what it's ultimately going to look like, but Denver's got to find ways to not be overwhelmed physically with that second unit. That probably means breaking up Peyton Watson's minutes a little bit. He gets overwhelmed in those situations, but he also has to play, because if you cut out his minutes entirely, then Denver's starters are just going to get tired. They're going to get tired. The T-Wolves have better depth. The Nuggets' depth has to show up in this series. If they do, then Denver has an opportunity. Final thoughts. Joker's going to need to score a lot. The T-Wolves like to do the thing where they have Rudy Gobert roaming off of him. If that's the case, then he's got to put Karl-Anthony Towns in the basket, or he's got to bait him into fouls, or he's got to pivot out of that and then take advantage of the rotations behind, where Rudy Gobert then comes over and tries to contest his shots. If he can't, Jokic has to put up 35 points. Jokic's usage rate in the Lakers series was about 25%. That's because the Lakers were doubling him on the catch a lot of times. Sometimes they doubled him on the dribble. But a lot of the times they tried to prevent him from shooting. And that's not a surprise to me. Will the T-Wolves try to employ the same strategy? Maybe. It seemed to work for the Lakers in bogging down the series a little bit. Wouldn't surprise me if the T-Wolves tried something similar. And that could mean even, hey, you've got Rudy Gobert, and then you double with some of the length and athleticism that they have off the ball, and it puts the ball in rotation again. It forces Denver's offensive players, the other starters, and then maybe some bench players to really make some plays. So I'm very curious to see how he handles that, but I expect him to do pretty well. Jamal Murray needs to get as healthy as possible. If you remember at the beginning of last playoffs, Nickeil Alexander-Walker was the one who was pressing him for 48 minutes. That tired out Jamal. It wore him down throughout the series, and now Jamal's dealing with a sore calf. Aaron Gordon's got to bring the ball up the floor sometimes. KCP's got to bring the ball up the floor sometimes. Joker does it pretty consistently, and we will see what happens. But I think that this is going to be fascinating from a tactical standpoint, but also a matchup standpoint and a physicality standpoint. Aaron Gordon needs to be big. He's probably the most important swing factor for the series. Can he guard Karl-Anthony Towns? Can he shut him down a lot of the time like he did last time? Can he shut down Anthony Edwards a little bit, or at least slow him down? If he can, while also being an offensive threat, the Nuggets have a good opportunity. Folks, I don't have an initial prediction. I've got an initial prediction. I don't feel good about it. I think this series goes 7 games. I think this series is going to be the toughest that the Nuggets have had to play in the Jokic era. And that includes the bubble Lakers. That includes the Suns series where they ultimately got swept. Obviously, those circumstances were different. But I think this series is going 7. Automatically, because of that, like Jokic and Murray in a game 7, I'll take them 99 times out of 100. But Anthony Edwards is tremendous. He's a competitor. He's fantastic. And the T-Wolves have enough talent that you have to respect it. So right now, I'm going to be a coward and say Nuggets in 7. But that's how I really feel, with the potential leaning for Wolves in 7. Because of how good they are. I really do believe that the Wolves will challenge the Nuggets. Whatever happens, though, Denver's got to show up. They got to play hard. And I think that there is a possibility that, look, if Denver defends home court and then steals game 3 or game 4 on the road, then maybe the series is over in 5. It's very possible. I think that's the leading odds on Bet Online for a series, is Nuggets in 5. And yet, got to feel a little bit more nervous than that. Because the T-Wolves are, like, it's a tough, tough matchup. So, we'll see what ultimately happens. I'm very excited for what comes to pass with this. I'm looking forward to seeing how Denver responds to maybe their toughest matchup of the playoffs. Folks, that is going to do it for this episode of Pickaxe and Roll, brought to you by our good friends over at Autograph and by Bet Online. Thank you so much for tuning into the show. Really appreciate all the love and support on the podcast, as always. Got some things planned, got some things lined up for the next couple days before Denver plays on Saturday. I'm probably going to talk to some guests over the course of these next couple days. We're looking forward to seeing what these matchups look like. And then, of course, we'll probably do Weekends with Swipa on Sunday after Denver plays on Saturday. We'll see what happens. Everybody, thank you so much for tuning into the show. Please hit that like button, that subscribe button on the way out. I'll talk to you guys very soon.